I think I'd like to start this morning, the message this morning, by taking just another moment of reflection, another moment of quiet, and invite you in that time to think about all the ways that you have already been of service today, the things that you have done for others, for yourself, for the world. It sometimes can be hard to recognize the service that we bring to the world, to see ourselves as being a service. As I said when I started, I'm grateful for the service you provide just by being here this morning. It's a wonderful thing. It's a beautiful thing. The idea for this service grew out of a book I've been reading by the South African author Michael Brown. Michael learned about and trained in a number of different alternative healing modalities and set himself up as a healer in practice of alternative medicines. At some point, he realized that his focus on being a healer was in fact a disservice, both to himself and to his clients. This is not an uncommon predicament for those of us who want to help. At some point, we realize that our helping is not helping and may be doing more harm than good. Michael identified two sources for this of this dilemma. First, in order us to be able to see ourselves as a healer or as a helper, we need to see the other person, the person we are trying to help, as somehow broken or dysfunctional. Second, too often our motivation to help comes as much from wanting to feel good about ourselves as it does from wanting to be of service. Identifying ourselves as a helper and being seen as such by those we have convinced need our help allows us to paper over our self-doubts and the wounded places we do not want to own or accept. In his book, Michael writes, "As long as I convinced myself the world needed my help, the world reflected this deluded condition. It beckoned for my assistance from every direction. It overwhelmed me with its pitiful cries. There was no end to the world's misery. But the moment I realized it was I who required assistance and shelved my arrogance and pride long enough to ask for guidance, for authentic assistance came forward to lift me up from my pit of self-importance." End quote. I can't speak for you, of course, but I know this rings true for me. There have been times in my life when I wanted to be helpful, not so much to help, but so that others would see me as helpful. And then when that worked, when it gained me the positive feedback and reinforcement I was seeking, I feel myself motivated to go out and find more broken or helpless people I can help, so I can gain more of that ego-feeding positive response. It's a vicious cycle. The more I help, the more positive strokes I receive, and the more I am motivated to go out and continue helping in the world and seeing the world and by extension myself as broken. I know I'm in this cycle when I notice that I'm helping, but the situation isn't getting any better. Often I'm frustrated and even angry because the person is not taking my advice or believing what I say. It's a sure sign that whatever I'm doing is not about helping someone else, but covering over some wounding or perceived lack in myself. And yet, we have to be fair here. Not all helping is self-serving. There are times when and ways in which we can, in fact, be helpful. When we are out walking and see someone fall on the ice, we can help by offering to assist them back up and ensuring they are okay. We might be straying into something other than help when we not only offer but insist on aiding them in getting up, or not only inquire about how they are, but insist on taking them to the emergency room to be checked out. The difference between helping and self-serving might lie in how we view the other person. When we offer to help someone get up, and it's a real choice, would you like my assistance? We are acknowledging their integrity and allowing them to decide whether they need help to get up or whether they want to get up at all. Perhaps they might just want to lie there. Who are we to judge? We allow that to happen. By insisting on helping, we construe them as incapable of helping themselves, requiring that they be helpless so we can be helpful. It begins to be more about us than about them. As noted, my thinking about this topic started from noticing the ways in which my helping was in some cases more self-serving than actually helping. But I want to turn that around and ask how we can be more truly of service. A couple things come to mind. First, I think it's always helpful to remember our first UU principle. We believe in the inherent worth and dignity of every person. And we can apply that principle first to ourselves. We believe in our own inherent worth and dignity. The most helpful thing you can do is remember that you are already whole. There is nothing about you that needs to be fixed. You are not broken. You are as Spirit intended you to be. You may have false beliefs about yourself that you need to release. You may have habits that are not serving you well. And you may not always experience yourself as whole. But it's still true, and the invitation to remember your wholeness is always there. I have spoken in the past about a few of the many ways through which we can remember ourselves in our full integrity. We can develop a meditation practice, practice daily gratitudes, listen deeply to one another, practice loving kindness as we did earlier in this service. There are lots of good choices, and the most helpful thing we can do is to find our own path to remembering wholeness, a path that works for us, and then follow it to its ultimate conclusion. Breathe deep, feel yourself here. Remember, you are already whole. Resting in that wholeness, we no longer have any need to see the world as broken so that we can portray ourselves as helpers and worthy of praise. We know we are worthy. No additional recognition is needed. In the words of the great Sufi poet Rumi, out beyond ideas of right doing and wrong doing, there is a field. We will meet there. Once we can conceive ourselves as whole, it becomes easy to see all those around us as whole as well. There is nothing that needs to be fixed, no lost souls waiting for us to save them. We can be here together, each in our perfection and our integrity. From that space, that willingness to be here in our full, glorious wholeness, true service is possible. Service arises from being present to ourselves and to others. I've already shared today, I think a couple of times, how thankful I am for your presence here with me. I am sometimes thanked for leading a service here at the church, and yet it is I who should be thanking you. Knowing you will be here calls me to be here with you and invites me into my wholeness. Each worship service we share is a blessing, and I am eternally grateful to you for making it possible. Thank you. Your presence, your wholeness matters. We can see how presence matters in that story we read for the Time for All Ages this morning. Only a young boy who was really present enough to recognize the bird with the broken wing can see what needed to be done, attend to it, set the bird free without attachment or any demand for reward when his job was done. As a person who has the honor of watching Carol when she interacts with the public who are bringing wildlife to Tamarack for care, I have the privilege of seeing how her presence with them and her willingness to listen to them and their story is a powerful ministry, helping each person feel valued and seen in their caring for wildlife. It is beautiful and healing work to witness. When people we meet or know, friends, family, people at work, strangers on the street, appear to be unhappy or struggling, it is too easy and self-gratifying to set ourselves up as experts judging what needs to be done. They wouldn't be so unhappy if they would just get out more, go for walks in the woods, do yoga, get a dog, get a cat, eat less, eat more, eat differently, turn off the TV, close their Facebook account, get off their phone, meditate, or take up whatever other recommendation of the day might be. But it's not helping if it stems from seeing them as broken and ourselves as a fixer. What helps when meeting others is to be fully present with them and to see them in their wholeness. Offering to be of service but not insisting we know what that service might be. When I'm in a dark place, it is often enough just to be seen and to know someone cares enough to be there with me. I suspect that it's true of many others as well. Your presence, your remembering of wholeness invites others to be present, acknowledging their own wholeness. The Quakers have a beautiful practice called clearness committees that exemplifies this principle. When a person in a Quaker community finds themselves at a crossroads or in need of guidance, they ask their community to offer them a clearness committee. The purpose is not to offer advice or guide the person, but simply to be present with them, to witness them into wholeness and knowing. A clearness committee meeting typically lasts two hours or less. It begins with a moment of silence so that each person can center themselves. When they are ready, the focused person presents a concise statement of his or her problem, and then committee members are asked to be present with and witness to the focused person as he or she wrestles with his or her problem. The committee members are not allowed by the rules of the committee to offer advice or draw conclusions or make statements. They can ask open and honest questions if such a question emerges that feels like it would be helpful. Open and honest questions are questions to which they cannot possibly know the answer, but which might help the focused person open up to new possibilities or knowing. And if you think about some of the questions we ask people when we're trying to be helpful, sometimes they're not so open and honest. Learning to ask open and honest questions is really not easy. All too often our questions are more advice or analysis in disguise. Have you ever thought it might be your mother's fault? Have you considered seeing a therapist? Those are not open and honest questions. Nor is a question that is intended to satisfy our curiosity or that presumes to know how a person is feeling. Doesn't that make you angry? Is not an open question. How do you feel when that happens? Is. Carol and I had the opportunity to learn about and participate in a clearness committee last summer, and it really is a remarkable process. The healing that comes to both the focused person and the committee can be immense. And what I really learned from in this is what makes it all work is the willingness to be present with each other in all our messiness. Not asking that anything be different, simply acknowledging one another's innate wholeness and wisdom. In preparing for this service, I also thought about the time I spent with my mother in her final illness last fall. When I arrived in Minnesota in early November, she'd already been in the hospital for a couple of weeks, and it was soon clear to me that she was not likely to live much longer. It was sometimes hard to be with her and with my father, her husband of almost 68 years, as she confronted death. The outcome was certain, the timing was not. It seemed there was nothing I could do. And yet there was something. What she and my father longed for more than anything was to know they were not alone. So we sat together waiting, not asking that anything be different, acknowledging one another in our wholeness, in the reality of that moment. I'm glad I was there. I learned that my presence matters, and I know your presence matters too. So how can we be of service? There is no higher calling. There is no higher calling than to show up in our fullness and our integrity, to be present with one another. Not asking that anything be different, listening deeply, seeing each other in our wholeness. How can you help? Choose to show up. Be fully present. Know you are enough.